Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies, Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got, pretty lady.
Welcome into Helmets and Heels. Second Monday in a row, we're live at a golf tournament. Today, live from Marsh Landing Country Club for the inaugural Inspiring Greatness Foundation Golf Tournament. And what a perfect day. Not too hot like yesterday. We had all that humidity. It is beautiful out there, and we are sitting overlooking the marsh and the golf course, and it is just fantastic. So we'll tell you more about Inspiring Greatness, the foundation, and what it does, founded by Roy Robertson Harris and his wife, Crystal, as we go along. But Mia, you are back in the fold. Welcome back.
I am back, indeed, and I brought the cold weather from Colorado with me.
It's not snowing. It's fine.
Yeah, it was actually hilarious. So we land in Denver, quick little pre-draft getaway. Kevin used to live out in Colorado, so still has a lot of really close friends out there. A couple of my college roommates live out there too, and go to lunch with one of them, and so we're sitting there Thursday, and she actually was leaving for a ski trip later that night, and so she says to us, "Oh wow, like you both haven't seen snow in probably years, right?" And we're like, "Yeah," and I'm thinking like a little dusting or flurries or something. I'm like, "I saw it like 2 years ago. It'll be nice if we see something." And she goes, "You guys will get to see snow this weekend." And I'm like, "Yeah, sure bet." And we saw about 6 inches of snow on the rental car when we woke up on Saturday morning, and the Rockies game that we were so excited to attend was not rained out, ladies. It was snowed out on Friday night. And so, but it was good. We still had a really good trip. Got to see a lot of people, which was a lot of fun. Nice little refresher before, of course, a busy, loaded week back here at the Superstation, and of course, with the NFL draft upon us. But yes, I did see snow. I did not see a lot of mountains. It was funny. We actually were driving to the airport yesterday, and that was the first time I saw Pikes Peak and actually saw mountains, because the previous 3 days, it was just fog and clouds, and that mountains are out there somewhere. So.
Yeah, I've told the story before. I went to Denver 2 years ago in May, and May
I was 20th, reminded of this. Yes,
it snowed there, and it was a full blanket of snow. But then, what's crazy is their weather today is gorgeous. So now they have 70s and sunshine, and
they did the 4 days prior to us arriving.
Right,
too,
but that's how it always goes. Yeah. Always be prepared for something like that. All right, so Mia, you were not here Thursday, Friday, so the Jaguars pre-draft media luncheon happened on Thursday.
Yes.
What are your big takeaways from that?
I tweeted them out because I did make sure while we were thawing out from the cold on Thursday that I did take the time to not only watch it, but like get my fresh, rewatched it the day of, thoughts on it, marinate on it over the weekend. And I still stick by a lot of the points that I made, which is the first of which, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And apparently, from the interactions I had on social media, maybe some of our contemporaries did not feel the same way. The fact that Trent Baalke specifically referenced trading up to 12, 13, or 14 multiple times. Mm-hmm. He doesn't offer up information in my 3+ years of working with him unless there's intent behind it. And the fact that unsolicited, he brought up trading up to 12, 13, and 14. Sure, you can read that as that is cornerback alley. That's where the Jaguars are trying to get to. Mm-hmm. Personally, I think he's playing chestnut checkers. I heard that, and I couldn't help but think, oh, yeah, he's made the phone calls. He specifically stressed that those top three wide receivers are so far and away above the rest of the class, even if there is depth in the rest of the class. He's made the calls to 7, 8, 9, 10 to figure out what it would take to get up there. I think between that, between the news that Brandon Ayuk still could be on the trade block, even if his agent is saying no, but there's reports that there is interest being solicited by the San Francisco 49ers. We know the Jaguars, and if nothing else, Ayuk's representation had conversations back in March. It says to me, if you couple all those things together, I understand everyone else in this town who is screaming they're going to take a cornerback, and that very well may happen, but I cannot rule out the fact that wide receiver is very much in play in the first round.
And I've thought that for quite some time now. Taylor, today in the Monday morning quarterback from Albert Breer, he puts this: the Jaguars have explored moving up, and they've done a lot of work on the top receivers in the draft. Losing Calvin Ridley, even with Christian Kirk and Gabe Davis, makes that spot a priority.
Yeah, and I think it's something we've talked about a lot, and there's still definitely a need there. So I think for Trent, when he's looking, because I was hearing Jags Today had Chad Ryder on today, and he was kind of talking about that, the depth of the wide receiver class, but also how that Marvin Harrison, Neighbors, and Adunze are in their tier by themselves. So if you really think it's worth it and those of one of those three guys that you like. And then now recently, Lauren, we're hearing that Neighbors, a lot of teams seem to like Adunze more than Neighbors. So Neighbors may, it looks like he may start sliding just because some of those other top teams, maybe that wide receiver is not their biggest focus. So to your point, Mia, when he's talking about that 11, 12, 13 range, maybe in Trent's head, he's like, okay, if we're seeing Neighbors start to fall, how can we and how quickly can we get up to that spot to draft someone like that if it's in his mind?
And I'm seeing some of you interacting with us on the YouTube chat line, which we are live at Marsh Landing Country Club, but the YouTube is still up and running, so make sure you leave a comment there where Hef says, I just don't think it's for anyone other than Adunze. And I agree. I think that he is one of the two eyes, you know, the apple of the eye of Trent Baalke, with Malik Neighbors being the other. Mm-hmm. We know that the Jaguars top brass and scouting department wined and dined Malik Neighbors after his pro day down in Baton Rouge. We also know that, in my estimation, they've done intel. And again, I know they've met with Rome Adunze, but they have done so much intel, ladies, with everyone around him. Like, they've literally had Jalen McMillan in for a top 30. They've had Troy Fatanu in for a top 30. Conversations with Michael Penix Jr. And you, like, go down the list, and it's like they're interviewing everybody but him, and I'm sure they've had at least some informal conversations with him. I go back to Brenton Strange last year, in which he said he had limited to no interaction with the Jags. However, his position coach at Penn State, Tyler Bowen, of course, used to be on the Jags staff. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes it's not the worst thing in the world if you don't show your hand early and you're getting to know the player via everyone but them, even if you do have conversations with them, because that's probably pretty important. And so I think that if you follow the crumbs of this little cookie trail, yes, those two players certainly make sense. Marvin Harrison Jr., I saw our friend Johnny Venerable at PHNX put out the odds from several sports books, now negative odds to go to the Arizona Cardinals at number 4 overall. He mentioned to us he knows that Marvin Harrison Jr. is the number one player on the Cardinals overall board. I think he's long gone. I also tend to believe the Jaguars prefer the other two wide receivers. And that's from multiple conversations I've had. I think they also recognize Marv's probably gone by number 4 or number 5, but I think that they do fancy those other two. And I was asked this today, and I think it's important to note. Somebody said to me, you know, would Zay Jones be released, traded, if they were, in fact, able to trade up into the top 10 and get one of those two wide receivers? The answer is no, he'd still be here. He would be your number 3, number 4 wide receiver, number 2, depending how you view Gabe Davis, while this young future number 1 wide receiver has time to learn on the job. If you're to tell me that Zay Jones is your number 4 wide receiver, that's a pretty darn good wide receiver room.
Definitely.
Is it not?
Yeah. And especially what we saw happen to the wide receiver room last year with injuries, and having that not only player that can develop into a top wide receiver is what it looks like, but in addition to that, you do have a way deeper depth than you did last year, to where you don't have to be as concerned as, okay, if Christian Kirk gets hurt or if Zay gets hurt, you have somebody that can be there and still perform at a high level too.
And all that being said, and I've wanted Brian Thomas Jr. now for so long that when people ask me, I'm like, I feel like I've said this 100 times. I'm surprised anybody's still asking. But I also understand, if the Jaguars draft a corner, the obvious reasons why.
Yeah.
Because they have a new defensive coordinator and they want to give him some pieces that are going to make his defense exactly the way he wants it to be. I just have a feeling that either Quinyon Mitchell or Terrion Arnold or both are off the board if the Jaguars are staying at 17.
Mm-hmm. Are you okay with Kool-Aid McKinstry then?
If that's the route they want to go, absolutely. Again, I'd rather have the 6'2", 209-pound receiver that caught a FBS-leading 17 receiving touchdowns this past season, for me personally. But if they go Kool-Aid McKinstry, I'll be excited, because that means Ryan Nielsen gets another corner.
Yeah. Let's bring it back to my thoughts from Trent Baalke's presser and Doug Peterson's presser on Thursday, which includes, again, something that I've been reporting for weeks, but you heard Trent Baalke say it right from the horse's mouth. They like the depth of this cornerback class. And the one connection, as we're talking about the paper trail surrounding Rome Adunze and Malik Neighbors, that I can't help but also think about as they're doing their intel on these prospects, as well as who these prospects have gone up against.
Mm-hmm.
Florida State fans, please turn up your radio right now. Turn on that game from the opener last year, LSU Florida State. Renardo Green had both Malik Neighbors and Brian Thomas in shackles at times. He absolutely dominated them. And yes, I understand there was no question about it. Malik Nabers looked like the most talented player, not named Keon Coleman, on that field on that day down in Orlando. But I can't help but say, whether you're doing intel on those two LSU wide receivers or you're looking at those two Florida State cornerbacks you could maybe get in the second, third, fourth round, if you look at them head-to-head and hearing Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas say Renardo Green was one of the best defensive backs they went up against, you can get him at 96.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, maybe he can't start day one, but I'm sure there's plenty of Florida State fans, if you want to get in on the conversation, 641-1010, that would tell us he could start day one. And I go back to Lance Zierlein of NFL.com's report and write-up on Renardo Green, in which he literally, the first five words, I wrote this in my mock draft last week, the first five words, as pure a press man corner as you will find. If you can get him at 96, then that affords you the opportunity to take a Brian Thomas, mm-hmm, or to trade up and try to get one of those wide receivers.
And that's the thing, is where does this staff, Trent Baalke, all the scouts, Doug Peterson, where do they sit as far as what they're willing to give up versus, mm-hmm, what they think the player is going to be? And that's, mm-hmm, of course, what none of us know, and they're never going to tell us who's on their board where. And I get the sense that they know how important this is for Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
Like, they know that another wide receiver, they had to improve the offensive line, that this is Trevor's season,
yeah,
to, and even if he has the extension and gets paid before that, but it's still his season to show the growth that he absolutely needs to show it going into year four.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Lauren. I think that they know, number one, we're hearing contract talks now before the season, so they know how important it is for them. If they do come to terms before the season starts, great. You know, great. I'm glad that each side is able to come to something, but I do think it, the importance of being able to finish this next season and know what you have out of Trevor Lawrence is important. And that's why so many people still, you know, shout about the offensive line and shout about adding another weapon, because you don't want to have any more question marks after this year.
Right. Absolutely. A lot of people say they don't want to have excuses anymore,
yeah,
right, for Trevor. And certainly that's the case. I told you guys in a group chat that I'm now having dreams about the NFL draft. So I do need it to be
over. I did too the other
over.
Night.
It's like I'm in front of the TV and I'm watching as people are picking, and then the Jags get to 17, and then I wake up and I'm like, well, what happened?
Hold on,
at least if I'm going to have this dream 1 through 16, can I at least figure out? But I can't classify it as a nightmare because the Jaguars do not pick, so I don't know what's happening. But a lot of quarterbacks are going. I can tell you that.
All right. Hey, get some X-Files music going, yeah, right now. RJ back at 1010XL World Headquarters.
Lauren's having some vision.
Lauren has seen the future. The future is right before our eyes.
I am not claiming to be like The Simpsons and seeing to the future.
If it makes you feel better.
Yeah.
I actually got a text from one of my old buddies who now works out in Houston, and his wife, who is due next month with their first child. Shout out to the Klesses. Be Klessed, everyone. Haley texts our group message yesterday and goes, I had the weirdest dream. We were all at the Masters, all our old Jacksonville news crew. Mia was covering the Masters, but we were all hanging out there. And I was like, well, I've never been to Augusta, so keep these dreams,
yeah,
coming. I don't know if it's the hormones.
Speak
or what.
Speak it into existence.
Manifest, baby. Manifest that. And, of course, if the Jaguars could get a nice wide receiver, that'd be nice to
manifest,
too.
We were talking, Mia, last week when we had Josh Scobie on,
yeah,
speaking of dreams. And he was talking about how he has, like, nightmares still about kicking. And he was like, I can never get my shoes on or tie my shoes. And I wake up and I'm, like, sweating because I can't.
Hey, certain things in life will just never go away. All right, so what is your NFL draft hot take? We're going to get John DeShazier, the senior writer for NewOrleansSaints.com, here in just a little bit to talk about what the Saints will do with that pick 14. But before we do that, what is your NFL draft hot take?
I think I kind of outlined it, and I was hesitant to tweet it out this morning. I even thought about not saying it on air today because I don't want to jinx it. But I am going to manifest it, ladies. I do believe the Jacksonville Jaguars are trading up,
ooh,
to the top 10 to try to select a wide receiver. And look, the Tennessee Titans need a wide receiver too, even after paying Calvin Ridley. DeAndre Hopkins is in a contract year. As much as logic points to them selecting an offensive lineman, they could still go wide receiver, mm, and then none of the three are left by the time the Jaguars could comfortably trade to 8 or 9 or 10 in the NFL draft. But I just can't help but feel like, and I'm sorry, Trent, if I'm giving away your playbook, I just can't help but get this nagging suspicion that the Jaguars, there's some work being done behind the scenes. So let's manifest it, folks. Let's talk about it. Let's have a conversation.
What about you, Lauren?
Mine, you're not going to like, Taylor.
Oh.
And honestly, I wouldn't like it either, but It's very similar to Mia's, but different team. Mm-hmm. The Colts trade up to get Rome Odunze. They believe they need weapons for Anthony Richardson and more than what they already have, and that they're the team that moves up to get him. And unfortunately, obviously, for your Bears, that means you guys don't get him, and I know you would love to have him on your team. But, yeah, the Colts pick at 15, and obviously that would be moving up to 9th. We'll see if that's what Chris Ballard and the team there do. But that's I'm concerned about something like that because I don't want to see any of these super talented receivers on any of, or Breck Bowers for that matter, on any of the division rivals.
Yeah, definitely don't want to. I genuinely am starting to feel like Odunze is going to go before Neighbors. And I've I like him better anyways, and I've mentioned that on here, but I think other people, and like they're you're seeing what Odunze can do, and I've went on my rant about this of, you know, his contested catches, his deep threats, his midfield, every level, intermediate, short, everything he can do, and I think people are going to start seeing that and being like, okay, this is a guy you definitely can't miss out on. And I remember even back in January, February being like, Odunze is not going to be available past pick 9. Like, it's just not. I truly don't even think he'll make it to the Bears either way if no one trades up or if someone sticks. But I'm starting to feel, just because of the conversations, and I guess this could be my hot take, but some of the conversations, almost every conversation we've had about Brock Bowers, and everybody has like some sort of individual like reason to why Brock doesn't fit their team, or because it's a tight end, or whatever the situation may be. And I'm starting to feel like he's going to slide later than what we're expecting.
Interesting. I like that a lot. I also see Floyd on the YouTube chat. Sorry, Mia, not going to the top 10. Trent told you he wouldn't even think about it until 12. Floyd, you must have missed the first 3 minutes of the program. That's exactly what Trent wants you to think. Why else would he intentionally say 12 three different times? I went back and read the transcript. Those are our hot takes for this week's NFL draft. RJ is going to queue up a little graphic for y'all so you can get in on that conversation on social media, as well as the text line designed by Lifetime Enclosures at 641-1010. Send us your draft hot take, or you can reply on X. While we wait for that post to go up, Lauren, we do have a special guest to say hello to.
That's right. Let's continue our countdown to the draft now.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Ready? In 3, 2, 1.
The countdown to the draft is on.
I hope you're ready.
Who'll be off the board when the Jaguars pick? Let's find out.
We do continue our countdown to the NFL draft. John DeShazer, senior writer at NewOrleansSaints.com, joins us now as the Saints are picking 14th. John, thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. I kind of felt special with that intro. I felt like I was like important or something.
You are very important, and one thing that intro says is I hope you're ready. Well, the question is, John, are you ready for the draft this week?
Yeah, kind of. I think I am. You know, you have so much buildup, and after a while you get a little bit of draft fatigue. But right now, yes, I am ready for it to begin and to end.
And you're pulling double duty right now, John, with the New Orleans Pelicans still alive in the NBA playoffs. I'll probably ask you a little bit about that in just a second. But without further ado, let's get right to it. You don't have to give us an exact player. We've been very open. This is an open forum with all of our guests who've joined us in this countdown. But if you had to guess position group, or perhaps a specific person, with the 14th overall pick, the New Orleans Saints select
offensive tackle. And there are several choices because the draft is deep at the position. And I'm going to butcher a name. So, you know, I hope I don't butcher these names too bad. So either it can be Fashanu from Penn State, or Fuaga from Oregon State, or, you know, Batanu from Washington. But the Saints need an offensive tackle. I understand that they like to take the best player available, but I'm certainly hoping that the best available in their grouping happens to be a tackle, because they desperately need one. They don't know what they have in Trevor Penning, the number one pick from a couple of years ago. I'm not exactly sure from the right tackle, that Ryan Ramczyk, his health. He had surgery in the offseason, and he's not responding quite as well as they had hoped. So they have questions at left and right tackle, and it's a position of extreme importance when you're talking about protecting Derek Carr, and hopefully getting this offensive line back together, because that's been the strength of this team. When this team was good from 2006 to maybe 2020, when it was a contending team, the root of it was they had a really good offensive line. That offensive line has deteriorated some these last couple of seasons. and it's no more evident than at left tackle where, you know, they drafted Trevor Penning to be the starter. He was unable to secure the position. He got hurt. Then he wasn't effective, and then Andrews Pete had to kick out from left guard to left tackle, and Andrews Pete's now an unrestricted free agent. So there's a lot of uncertainty on the offensive line for the Saints, and I think it's a position that they have to address, and they have to address it early while the quality player is there.
John, we can definitely relate to just how crucial that offensive line can be for a quarterback. When you mentioned Derek Carr, and what are the thoughts around Derek Carr there? Do they believe that it's just, you know, fixing that line a little bit, maybe a weapon away from being able to see some of what we've seen in the past of Derek Carr?
Well, I think they brought in Clint Kubiak with the offensive system from Kyle Shanahan because they want to run the ball a little bit more. And, again, you need to have an effective offensive line to be able to do that. But they want to be able to get Derek Carr, you know, have him hand it off a little bit more to Alvin Kamara or, you know, to the rookie from last year, or maybe have to draft another player. But they want to be able to lean a little bit more on the ground game as San Francisco did. That's where Clint Kubiak came from. And they want to be able to take a little bit of that pressure off of Derek Carr. Now, Derek Carr, Saints fans, you know, I don't know if it's a vocal minority or what, but, I mean, just detested him last year for some reason. And the guy had a really productive season, especially down the stretch. So I think they believe they can get similar production, maybe even better production, with a more effective running game. This team's got to get Alvin Kamara back on track at running back. Alvin Kamara still has some good usage in him, still has another probably, I think, elite maybe 2-3 years in him. He's not Christian McCaffrey, but he was a guy who was mentioned in the same breath as Christian McCaffrey for several years, and that Alvin Kamara still exists as a player, especially in an offense if it's going to be similar to what San Francisco did, because you're going to throw him the football out of the backfield. You're going to be able to open up some holes for him in the running game. You're going to be able to get him, you know, on the edges, and those kinds of things I think Alvin Kamara can still do effectively, and he can get down the field as a receiver, but you're going to have to be able to do it with an offensive line that can either protect Derek Carr when it's time for him to throw it, because they want to run a lot of play action and they want to throw it deep. But you also have to be able to open up those holes and those seams for Alvin Kamara and the running game to be able to get them going, to be able to make things balanced for Derek Carr.
Is there any sort of hot seat talk for Dennis Allen at this point?
Excuse me?
Is there any sort of hot seat talk for Dennis Allen, the head coach there?
I don't think so, because, look, the Saints ownership leadership group is a patient group. And they proved that with Sean Payton. Even though Sean Payton won Super Bowl, but Sean Payton had back-to-back-to-back 7-9 seasons. And there was never a thought of them, like, replacing him or doing anything. In fact, at the last of those 7-9 seasons, Sean Payton came to the NFL owners meeting and showed us a contract extension. So this is a really patient group. They understand that sometimes it might take a little bit. And so, but I will say this, I think this is kind of a, I don't want to say a boom or bust year for Dennis Allen, but obviously you want to see improvement. 9-8 last year was not good enough to get into the playoffs. They were really close to getting into the playoffs. I think they believe this is a playoff team with some tweaks. That's always debatable because a lot of things have to go right, especially health-wise, for a team to get to the playoffs. And the Saints are still depending on DeMario Davis to be the Wolverine at linebacker. The guy doesn't get hurt and he's aging, and he doesn't seem like he's aging. Seems like he might be aging backwards. They still are depending on some production out of Cam Jordan, whose production dipped last year because he was injured. And so he's getting a little bit older. They're still depending on, you know, some production from Peyton Turner, a defensive end who, a former first-round pick who didn't give him a lot of production last year, who's been hurt the majority of his career. So they're depending on a lot of variables that you can't really control. And so a lot of people say hope in the plan. And I know that the Saints are probably hoping for some of those things to work in their favor, but they still believe they're on the verge of being a playoff team. They still believe they have that kind of talent on this team, which is why you sign Derek Carr and you give him the extension and you feel like you're a quarterback away, a good quarterback away from being able to get the division championship, which certainly seems within reason, seems within grasp, because the NFC South isn't the strongest division in the league, even though, you know, the Falcons signed Kirk Cousins and now everybody thinks they're you know, the projected winner of the division. But look, you still feel like you have a chance if you're the Saints. And the first order of business is winning the division championship. If you win the division, you automatically get in the playoffs. And once you get in the tournament, anything can happen. But they feel like they're capable of doing that. So I don't think Dennis Allen, I don't think his seat is very warm right now. It could be after this season if they don't get back to the playoffs. But this is a very, very patient ownership group.
John, you just mentioned the division, the NFC South, and the Falcons on paper looks like they can be a pretty dangerous team. But what about some of the other? What are your thoughts on Baker Mayfield? We saw a little bit of a resurgence of him last year. The Panthers hoping to see more out of Bryce Young this year. What are your thoughts on those other teams?
Well, I think Carolina's still a work in progress. I mean, they just need a lot of parts to go around Bryce Young. And I thought they did him a disservice because I think the infrastructure wasn't there for him last year. In terms of Baker Mayfield, I mean, it's one of those things where he played well last year. We saw him have a really good year back when he played with Cleveland and got the Browns into the playoffs. And so I think it's one of those things where you wonder if the consistency is going to be there. Now, the consistency has helped a whole lot when you got Mike Evans to throw it to. So yeah. I'm sure they're depending on that because they re-signed, you know, they signed Mike Evans and kept him in the fold. And he signed, in fact, before Baker Mayfield did. So I'm sure they feel pretty good about their chances because they've been able to win the division back-to-back years, and they were not necessarily a juggernaut. And I think some of the things that they needed to work through financially in terms of the salary cap, they kind of took the hit last year and still were able to win the division. So I think Tampa Bay feels pretty good about its chances. And to me, that's the team to beat. The team that wins the division is always the team to beat to me, especially if they're able to replenish or keep in the fold the people that are critical to what they want to do. And so I think they're the team to beat. I understand Atlanta looked like they were just a quarterback away because Atlanta's got some great weapons, really good offensive weapons that they didn't necessarily use well. But you still got to get out there and you got to gel with them and you got to prove it. And that's a team that, you know, I'm just not sold exactly on the Falcons just yet. I still would say you got to go through Tampa Bay first.
He is John D. Shazer. He is the senior writer for NewOrleansSaints.com. You can find his stuff there. He also is the Pelicans radio color analyst. So, John, before we let you go on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask about Game 1 in OKC, where you see the Pelicans' trajectory, obviously knowing no Zion Williamson for the foreseeable future right now.
I don't feel bad. They lost 94-92, had a chance to win it on a late three-pointer, and didn't execute well down the stretch whatsoever. That's really been the bugaboo of this team. They hadn't executed well in the clutch moments, the last 5 minutes of games. And so hopefully that's something they're able to clean up. But to allow 94 points on the road to the number one seed, I think that's something to be able to build on. I think both teams will be better offensively, Oklahoma City included. So I think Game 2 will be a little bit more entertaining offensively, but in terms of drama, you know, I loved it, and I think the Pelicans match up well with the team. Even though the Pelicans are the number 8 seed and Oklahoma City is the number 1 seed, I think this is the team that the Pelicans probably match up with best in the playoffs. So I think there's an opportunity to maybe steal Game 2 and go home and hopefully win a couple there and really, really make this an interesting series.
Well, we know it's crossover season for you with the NFL draft this week and the Pelicans alive and well in the playoffs. So we appreciate you taking some time to join us on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline, my friend.
I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
And he is at John, DeShazier on X if you want to follow his stuff. And again, the senior writer for NewOrleansSaints.com as well as part of the Pelicans radio broadcast crew.
That's right. We are live here at Marsh Landing Country Club. We'll tell you all about the Inspiring Greatness Foundation, what they're doing here in Jacksonville, right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday on Helmets and Heels, the local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust.
Tonight, we lie awake.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010XL.
Story time. Oh, sorry, Lauren.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say today is our first Big Chief Tire Monday, so I just wanted to let everybody know.
Yes, round of applause, RJ.
So excited to have them join us as a sponsor. They've obviously been a sponsor of the Frangie Show for many years now, and we're excited to bring them on to Helmets and Heels and make sure you visit Big. There we go. Visit BigChiefService.com today or BigChiefTire.com, either one. If you need any sort of vehicle services, they are the absolute best. Of course, that's where I get my tires. And when I need oil changes, that's where I go as well. They have five locations around town. All right, now we're ready for your story, Mia.
My story is that as we were driving around Colorado, I said, you know what, let me throw on the Helmets and Heels Spotify playlist. And there were several moments in the drive in which Kevin said, oh, that's a Taylor song. Oh, that's a Taylor
pretty
song.
Pretty obvious.
You can clearly tell. Unless she picks country, outside of that, I feel like
there's some surprises in
you
there.
You pretty much know if it's like Whitney Houston, Mariah Carey, or any sort of alternative rock,
yeah,
is
that's me.
How I would classify it. That is 100% Taylor Doll.
Yeah, and that's why I just had to, another Taylor Doll song as we were coming back
that
in
was,
here
yes.
in the 12 o'clock hour live from the Inspiring Greatness Foundation golf outing at Marsh Landing Country Club. We are expecting to have some of the Jaguars contingent join us, including the host, Roy Robertson-Harris, his wife, Crystal. They're all here. They're all very excited. I am told they only have about two more holes to play, so we're expecting
perfect.
To have them coming up in the 1 o'clock hour, and plenty of other Jags in the field. I did just post, if you want to laugh today, if you need to start your Monday off with a laugh, Josh Allen apparently hit a goose on one of his first holes of the day with a line drive.
Is the goose okay?
We don't know,
okay.
But I would encourage you to check out that video on the 1010XL social channels because Josh volunteered it up to us. So, yeah, hopefully we get Josh on a little bit later and he can tell us more about the duck or the goose that, you
I'm
know.
Surprised it didn't come after him. Those things are crazy.
Yeah, we tried to interview the goose, actually, myself and John O'Leary, and they couldn't be reached for comment, but maybe that was a sibling of the goose that Josh hit.
By the way, Inspiring Greatness Foundation, it started, like you said, by Roy Robertson-Harris and his wife Crystal, and they seek to empower and uplift youth and single mothers. You can visit them online at inspiringgreatnessfoundation.org. They've also got Instagram you can follow as well. And so, like you said, there are several Jaguars players out there. The sun is out now, and like I said, it's a beautiful day here for this. All right, we talked a lot of Jaguars already, but one thing we didn't mention, this happened late on Friday after the show. Tyler Shatley re-signs with the Jaguars, back for his 11th season. I know there were rumors of possible retirement after the season, but I, for one, am so glad that he's back because I do feel like he provides really good veteran leadership for that offensive front. Even if he's not the most vocal leader, he doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
He is always there, ready to plug in when they need him.
Yeah, and I think like we've heard a lot when you talk to coaches about you don't always have to be that rah-rah guy to be a good leader, and that's a perfect example of what Shatley's been for this offensive line, like you said. Just that consistent piece that you can count on when maybe things aren't going well or you're dealing with injuries, Shatley can come in and do his job. I feel like I barely know a life without Shatley.
Seriously, there are any Jaguars fan that's under the age of 12, basically,
only
has never had a Jaguars team without Shat.
I love to tweet it whenever Tyler Shatley does something good on a football field or Scottie Scheffler wins, just like he did this morning in the suspended and then officially completed Hilton Head RBC Heritage Tournament this morning. Yes, you heard that right. Scottie Scheffler won again. In the end, there will be nothing left but the cockroaches, Scottie Scheffler and Tyler Shatley. And I've told Tyler that, and he enjoys, I think, when I say that. So I will continue to say it.
If Tyler gets to be compared to Scottie Scheffler,
yeah.
I think he's A-OK.
Absolutely.
With that,
I think what's going to be curious – and I've said this, I talked to a couple people, you know, like, Tyler Shatley is one of the best dudes in that locker room. I consider him a friend of mine. What I am so curious now to see, we know injuries happen along the offensive line. It's the nature of the game, and we don't wish that upon anybody. But the numbers game of how this is going to work out for the Jaguars, if you're going to keep both Cam Robinson and Walker Little, you have Anton Harrison, you have Brandon Scherff, you have Mitch Morse, you have Luke Fortner. You have Ezra Cleveland, who also was in the field today, and I didn't realize how good of a driver of a golf ball he is. He's very, very good golfer. You have Cooper Hodges, who your hope is that he becomes a long-term solution at one of those guard spots. That's eight who you know for sure are most likely making the roster. This team carried nine offensive linemen last year. And so then you consider the Blake Hanses, play every position along the offensive line. Chandler Brewer, who was on the practice squad, a vested veteran. Do you draft a rookie? Because you need to develop somebody, just like you developed Hodges in an incubator last year. And so that's where my concerns are in terms of numbers and in terms of can we start bringing in young guys, even if it's not a first-round pick, because that first-round pick, quite frankly, where would you play them? Because there's basically two people at every position. But how do you figure this out that Shatley is still on your 53-man roster if you're also planning for the future?
Well, and I guess at this point in time, you can't be guaranteed that Shatley's on the 53-man roster. It's just they re-signed him for depth and for competition and things like that. I think that's where it'll end up landing because, like you mentioned off the top, there are always injuries, unfortunately, when it comes to this position group. Offensive line seems to always have multiple times throughout the year where you have to find another starter. And so the other, I think the biggest question is Cam Robinson. Is Cam Robinson definitively the left tackle starter right here, right now? Or if he's not, then yes, then I could see potentially drafting an offensive tackle early, whether it's 17, 48, 96, what have you. But yeah, it starts to get to a point where you look at the Brandon Sheriff re-signing or extension and you go, interesting. That's the one where I was like, okay, I guess they do believe that he's been dealing with injuries, and once he gets healthy again, he'll
be
fine.
And they also believe Cooper Hodges, if he's the heir apparent, he didn't see a game field during the regular season last year because of injury. We saw it last year with Ben Bartsch. You can't bank on a guy with, you know, Bartsch had more experience than Hodges. You can't just bank on that guy coming in and instantly coming off of a significant injury being ready to go. And so that's where I believe that they said, you know what, we need one more year of him learning, being a backup, but also maybe having an opportunity to play here and there, and especially on special teams. And in turn, you keep Sheriff around for one more year. Contractually, it's in the best decision of the team because of the dead cap money that you would have incurred. And so here they are running it back.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I think a part of it is interesting, too, because we mentioned how important this season is for Trevor Lawrence. And so when you're looking at your offensive line that you want, obviously this year, but you also want to build that. You want a line to where the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, you're not having to worry about it. And not only not having to constantly in free agency bring in guys, you want to be able to build and develop a line that is, can all be on the field and can kind of start to form and mesh and have this. Because when you look at teams around the league, when you talk about the best teams, it's all ones that you talk about their offensive line. And a lot of the times it's guys that have been together for a long time and you can tell.
Yeah. Let's get it to the Jaguars defense. Certainly Trent Baalke, Doug Peterson made some comments on Thursday at the pre-draft media luncheon that I found interesting, and Mia hasn't had a chance to weigh in on that. So we will get to that when we return. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on a Big Chief Tire Monday on 10 to XL 92.5 FM.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday on Helmets and Heels, the local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust.
Right, I think system plays an important role in that as well. You know, how are you going to play the corners? Are you going to play them off man? Are you going to play them on the line of scrimmage and press and run with guys? So I do think that plays into it. I think, again, I think there's a really good depth and really good skill at the corner position in this draft, more so than maybe the last couple drafts, you know, that I've been involved with here. So it'll be interesting how these top guys fall off the board.
Helmets and Heels is switched on by
First Coast Lighting and Fans.
Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor on 1010XL.
The comments of Trent Baalke this past Thursday at the Jaguars pre-draft media availability, talking about the defensive scheme and how that could determine which cornerback they select. We've started to really have a theory that maybe the Jags go receiver at 17, corner later. Of course, you could completely talk me into the opposite of corner first because Ryan Nielsen needs that other press corner, you know, opposite Tyson Campbell. It all depends on how they feel about Ronald Darby. We won't know that certainly until after the draft is over. But Mia, the other thing that Trent Baalke said was the fact that the Jaguars, he really confirmed, are switching to a 4-3 instead of a 3-4, and they have to find their Sam linebacker from within. Who do you think will be that Sam linebacker?
Yeah, well, the boys of primetime had Devin Lloyd in studio on Friday. We heard that a lot more designed pass rush opportunities for Devin Lloyd, which I think is huge because when you look at his time at Utah, Devin Lloyd came in as a 2-3-star safety. And Kyle Whittingham and his team were able to build him into this all Pac-12, RIP the Pac-12, linebacker, where he did a little bit of everything. And granted, going from the college game to being asked to be an off-ball linebacker, like it's a transition that not enough people really give, you know, the Fred Warners of the world enough credit for. Mita Kimes was on Move the Sticks podcast with Bucky Brooks and Daniel Jeremiah, and she talked about it. Like, the reason we're not seeing so many inside linebackers going in the first 2-3 rounds of the NFL draft, certainly you could consider the mirror theory of, well, there's not a lot of running backs going and the value of that interior isn't what it used to be. But also part of it is it's taken so many of these guys years to actually transition from the college game to the National Football League, whether it's the Patrick Queens of the world, Kenneth Murray with the Los Angeles Chargers, former first-round picks, Jordan Brooks with Seattle, that quite frankly, despite a pretty good college career, just never panned out. And so I think how you avoid Devin Lloyd from falling into that trap is, number one, great coaching, which I believe he's going to have under Ryan Nielsen. And number two, putting him in a position to succeed. We've talked a lot about Caden Ellis, the brother of Jonah Ellis, a prospect who I think the Jaguars could target, and another fellow Utah Ute of Devin's. Caden Ellis was a little thought of linebacker coming out of college. Some people thought he'd be a safety. People didn't really know what to make of him. Ryan Nielsen was somehow able to scheme him into 7 sacks his final year in New Orleans. He follows him to Atlanta. He schemes him into 4 sacks last year. And so my question is, can you compare that to what he could do with Devin Lloyd? And in turn, does that free up a Chad Muma to be that guy next to Foye Aluikun, who we know will have the green dot? That's the thing that I'm most interested in. Yeah, there will be people who will say, well, then you drafted a Sam linebacker in the first round, to which I say, what was Caleb on Chase on once upon a time?
Well,
yes. I mean, in reality, like, some people who, you know, wanted to be optimistic about it said maybe all he ever was a Sam linebacker. I think with Devin Lloyd, it would be more of that chess piece, which, you know, you can even go to the Isaiah Simmons of the world. Like, when he was drafted out of Clemson, the thought was, well, he's the chess piece, the ultimate chess piece, and we never saw that come to fruition. Can Ryan Nielsen do that with Devin Lloyd?
Do you think they're looking internally first?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. I think that Ryan Nielsen wouldn't have taken this job if he didn't have a plan for the guys that they have.
And that's where the question is. We know Foye Aluikun's going to be on the field, to your point. And we're pretty sure Devin Lloyd also is going to be on the field in that inside linebacker group. Who is that third linebacker when they need that guy out there? And is it, we talked about Chad Muma, we talked about Ventrell Miller.
Yep.
There are other options on the team. And I think that is a very important piece. But there's also a lot of time to figure that out between now and the start of the season.
And what about like a Amir Abdullah?
Yeah. Oh, Yasir Abdullah.
Yasir Abdullah.
No, he's another one who I couldn't agree more.
I don't know if he even has a position now. That's my concern.
He's right there with Devin Lloyd. Mm-hmm. I think he's your prime candidate for, we're just going to move him all over the field, especially in third down situations where we scheme him up for sacks. Mm-hmm. Maybe we have him line up over a guard. Maybe we have him line up 9 wide. Like, you can put him all over the place. And so I'm glad you brought that up, Taylor, because I think he's another candidate for that. My question is, and again, it was so timely listening to the podcast with Mina, with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks, because they talked about this. The problem then becomes for these young linebackers like a Yasir Abdullah, now entering his second year in the league, if they are that chess piece, that means they have to be in meetings with the inside linebackers. Mm-hmm. They have to be in meetings with the defensive line. They have to be in meetings with the outside linebackers, with the safeties. And that can be a lot because they don't know where they belong, and they're hearing from so many different position groups. And that's where the defense coordinator having everybody on the same page in alignment is so critical. And that's a piece that I know the Jags didn't have last year, and I know it's something Ryan Nielsen's striving for this year.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, we will continue our countdown to the NFL draft. Angela Morian from Indianapolis joins us. The Colts pick 15th. Which direction are they headed in? I think they're a very intriguing team to keep an eye on. You are listening to Helmets and Heels live from Marsh Landing Country Club for the inaugural Inspiring Greatness Foundation Golf Tournament on 1010 XL and 92.5 FM.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday on Helmets and Heels, the local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust.
Ready? In 3, 2, 1.
The countdown to the draft is on.
I hope you're ready.
Who'll be off the board when the Jaguars pick? Let's find out.
Oh, you are not mistaken, Helmets and Heels listeners. You did indeed hear that liner twice as we begin the 1 o'clock hour of this. I can't believe I'm about to say it, Lauren. What are Mondays powered by on Helmets and Heels?
Big Chief Tire.
I didn't know. We're calling it Big Chief Tire Monday, what today is. And what way to ring it in than with our next guest as we count down to number 17. We have the 1010 XL Media Mock Draft on Wednesday, so we pull a double duty on this fine Monday, and we welcome on Angela Morian of Wish TV to make the selection for the Indianapolis Colts at number 15. How are you, my friend? Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, ladies, thanks for having me. I don't know if I want the selection pick. I can provide some insight. I don't know if I want to be on the clock, though. That's a lot of pressure.
Hey, you know, when I first messaged you, you said it. When I texted you last week, you said, honestly, unlike last year, I don't have a name for you, but you have thoughts and ideas in different directions the Colts could go with that 15th overall selection. So let's dive into it. I won't put you on the clock, Angela, but I will say, in what direction do you believe the Colts are headed?
That's the thing about this draft. I don't know. Last year was so clear, it's quarterback. It was a question of which quarterback is it going to be, fourth overall. You have a lot of options. This year, pick 15, as with most picks in the middle of the first round, you have no idea what's going to be available. You have no idea what you're looking for in terms of position-wise. But it seems like, for the most part, the consensus is general manager Chris Ballard is either going to go with a defensive back, which they desperately, desperately need, or a wide receiver, which I feel like is a little bit less on the need scale, but still very much a necessity for the Colts. They're expecting Anthony Richardson back, which was last year's fourth overall pick and quarterback. He only played four games. He lost his season to a shoulder injury really early on. He is back throwing and at off-season workouts last week. So that's positive for the Colts. But what players do they have around him as far as targets go? They secured Michael Pittman Jr., clear number one, major contract, big money, three-year deal this off-season. That's clear. Alec Pierce was kind of the number two receiver last season, and he didn't have the season he did his rookie season. A lot of that can be said for, oh, hey, Gardner Minshew. I know I came on this show and said that he was going to have a fantastic game in Jacksonville in his return. That didn't happen. But for the most part, he had a good season. He just doesn't have the length, the throwing, the strength in his throwing arm as much as Richardson does. So maybe Pierce gets a little bit more of action. But I'm seeing a lot of conversation around receivers, specifically Texas's Xavier Worthy. If you guys remember him from the combine, I saw you at the combine. He set the combine record for fastest 40-yard dash, 4.21. That can be attractive to a guy like Chris Ballard if he's still available at 15. I think that's a possibility. Another receiver that I'm hearing a little bit of rumblings about is LSU's Malik Nabers. I think that would require a trade up for the Colts. Listen, Ballard, he trades down, he trades out. He doesn't trade up. So I don't really foresee that happening unless, you know, a miracle happens. On the other side, I mentioned defensive backs. One that's a consensus on mock drafts that I've been seeing is Toledo's Kenyon Mitchell, who's considered the best cornerback of this draft. The question is he going to be around at 15? So I think, again, going back to and then my very long-winded answer, I apologize, but going back to my original statement, it depends on what's around. Maybe Ballard likes one of these guys, but they get picked two, three picks before the Colts are on the clock, and then you have to shift. But I think it's either going to be a receiver or a defensive back.
Angela, let's zoomed out look of last season, because down here in Jacksonville, it kind of the chatter last offseason heading into the regular season. It was a lot of talk of expectations of the Jags winning the South and how it kind of seemed like it was it should be an easy path. It obviously didn't turn out that way. But what was the aftermath of everything with the Colts and how you guys felt at the end of the season, kind of taking that zoomed out look of how it went?
Yeah, summed up, opportunity lost. The Colts had a backup quarterback for the majority of the season and were one win away from making it to the playoffs. That was just deflating for the locker room. You could tell they had it in the grasp. It wasn't like the season before, the four-win season that was completely in turmoil. This, they actually had something going and rolling, and they just couldn't get over that final hump. The thought is, okay, we loved Gardner Minshew, but if we had just had Anthony Richardson, we would have been in the playoffs. So I feel like that is what's motivating this team going into this season and having confidence. I, from an outsider's perspective, the AFC South is even tougher this year. With the moves the Texans has made, the Jags shoring up a bunch of free agents, and then you don't know what the Titans are going to look like with the new coach, what quarterback they're going to pick and go with. Like, how are they going to handle that situation? There's a lot of uncertainty in the AFC South right now. The Colts have to be focused and capitalize on that. Make sure Richardson stays healthy and get him the pieces he needs around if they really want a chance at winning the division. I think a more realistic goal would be getting into the wild card of the playoffs. But it has to be playoffs, guys. It has to, for the Colts, it's playoffs or we are cleaning house, I feel like. Not, with the exception of Shane Steichen, but I feel like it's been too long in this city. The city loves the Colts too much to not be in the playoffs since Andrew Luck.
Angela, down here, I think most Jaguars fans would put the Jags either first or second in an AFC South power poll because, of course, they have so much optimism about the future. But obviously, that's exactly how Colts and Texans and Titans fans are all feeling as well. I think, obviously, the Texans fans would put themselves first. Where do you think Colts fans and where would you put the Colts in the power poll?
I have no idea where Colts fans would put them. Half of the Colts fans are like, yeah, we're going to win everything. And the other half are like, we're not even going to make it to the playoffs. How I would put them is second after the Texans. I think the Texans are the clear favorite for the division title, defending it. Plus, you got Stephon Diggs, a big, big offseason pickup for C.J. Stroud. The Colts, I think, you know, if they can get over the hump of beating the Jags, which would be nice for a change for Indy fans, then I feel like they could have that second spot in the division. I think it would go Texans, Colts, Jags, Titans.
I was going to say, in terms of Jaguar fans and what they're thinking as you're saying this, Angela, anytime the Colts come to TIA Bank Field or Everbank Stadium now, there's a pretty good chance that whatever bodies are buried under the stadium and the Colt curse of Colt fever will rear its ugly head once more and the Jaguars will pull out a victory here in Duval County. Again, Angela Morion joining us of Wish TV Sports. You can find her at Angela, MORYANTV on X, Twitter, whatever you're calling it these days. She believes the Colts could go in a variety of fashions with that 15th overall pick. But I want to stick to something you mentioned in your opening comments, Angela. You don't believe that Chris Ballard will trade up because historically he has not. I've seen Peter Schrager of the NFL Network suggest that there could be a trade up. Lauren said that that's her hot take for this NFL draft calendar week, that she believes there is a chance that Ballard breaks from tradition and does try to go into the top 10 to secure one of those top three wide receivers. What say you? Do you think because he could potentially be on the hot seat, that's why he would break that tradition?
Yeah, you know, I think there is a chance. Listening to Ballard's comments in his press conference last week, he did say that he isn't opposed to moving up, but the mentality was if the price is right and if there's somebody we like in striking distance, those were the words he said, in striking distance. Ideally, what Colts fans and the Colts would want is to get Marvin Harrison Jr. from Ohio State, the son of famed, probably Hall of Famer, Marvin Harrison, receiver, won a Super Bowl with the Colts. But Ballard went on the record and said, yeah, in my dreams, I would love to do that, but that's not going to happen. I think I've seen Harrison go in at like fourth or fifth. There's no way that Ballard is going to move up 10 spots. What he would have to give up is extreme to move up that much to get Marvin Harrison Jr. Another thing that Ballard has said is he puts a lot of value in the number of picks he has in the draft. Right now, the Colts have 7, 1 in each round. But if you look at last year, the Colts made moves to have 12 picks in the draft. All but one of those picks are still on this roster for the Colts. It's not a matter of, in Ballard's mind, it's clear, it's not a matter of where am I picking, how high up am I picking, it's how many picks do I get, because he's confident he's going to find those gems in whatever round that will really benefit the team in the long run. If you look two years ago, he traded away the first round pick, I should say. And let me count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Eight picks in that draft, all but one are still on the team from 2 years ago. Ballard has made it clear that he wants to keep the players that he's chosen, that he believes in, on this team as we've seen with how many contracts he's handed out to people already in the building this free agency and not making many outside moves. He wants to have his guys, the guys with high character, high football IQ, and talent on his team in his building and not looking anywhere else. So I think it's more of a stretch that he'll trade up and lose picks than it is for him to trade down and gain picks with just what he's been talking about last week.
And finally, Angela, how is Anthony Richardson's health, and how excited are Colts fans to see him finally hopefully play all 17 games?
Yeah, that would be nice for Indianapolis in general. Colts fans thrilled about it, could not get more of the injury updates. Right now, as I said, he is throwing an off-season workout, a voluntary workout, so that's been good. He's been rehabbing in Florida, which is, you know, you guys know he played at Florida. He's from Florida. So it's good to see him throwing again. They did kind of have him on a pitch count per se. Head coach Shane Steichen said that, you know, they're going to take it day by day. It's only April. We still got months before the season begins. So I think there's a lot of positivity in how he's rehabbing. I think the question would be, how will that arm strength return after surgery? And the more pressing question is, how do you dual threat, scramble ready quarterback, the size that he is, the abilities that he has as a pretty much a running back, not get hurt like a running back? Because you can't afford to have another season where you lose 12 games for the face of the franchise because he's getting hurt. Every single game, ladies, every single game, Richardson left with some sort of injury. It might not have cost him the next game or even a practice, but there was an injury, concussion, knee, ankle, and then the shoulder injury that ended his season. You have to be able to be smart and figure out a way to use him how you want him to in that dual threat capacity, but keep him healthy as well. And that will be the number one thing, number one problem, issue, whatever you want to call it, that Steichen and this Colts organization have to be able to handle this coming season.
My friends, thank you so much for joining us, Angela, on the All Pro Roofing Hotline. And more importantly, please take care of Caitlin Clark for me. It was a great crossover to see you in Brooklyn for the WNBA draft last week on the scene as she officially became a member of the Indiana Fever.
Hey, ladies, thanks for having me anytime, and I will definitely be taking it. I think Caitlin's going to take care of me more like it.
Yeah, okay. Listen, Iowa fans will say the same thing. It's kind of like when Jaguars got the lucky ticket that was Trevor Lawrence. It's a life-changing experience, so enjoy the ride, my friend, and thank you so much for joining us on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. And again, Angela Morian TV is where you can find her on X.
All right, we are live here at Marsh Landing Country Club, the inaugural Inspiring Greatness Foundation golf tournament, and we are hopefully going to get Roy Robertson-Harris in a little bit and his wife Crystal to join us to talk all about the foundation and the first golf tournament, how everything's going as well. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday on Helmets and Heels, the local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust.
Your lunch with Helmets and Heels.
Presented by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
On 1010 XL.
Oh, the dignitaries, they are rolling through as the Inspiring Greatness Foundation's first golf outing gets ready for the awards ceremony and the luncheon. And joining us now, Crystal Robertson-Harris, the co-founder. Are we calling you the co-president? What is officially your title?
You know, co-founder sounds good.
Co-founder of the Inspiring Greatness Foundation, of course, Roy Robertson-Harris's wife. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you all so much for coming out and supporting. Yeah. It's so amazing to have all of our people come out and support us. It's a great turnout. Great turnout for our first year.
I feel like it was just yesterday that, you know, I was speaking with you, speaking with Clint, Roy's marketing agent, about getting this idea off the ground running at Marsh Landing.
Yes.
Walk us through what it took from a napkin in September to where we are here today here at Marsh Landing.
Oh, my gosh. A lot of phone calls, It was a lot of brainstorming, a lot of making those connections with all of our friends, you know, and all of our people that own our own businesses and stuff. It was a long journey. And I'm so impressed of the turnout. We, you know, just had to get on the phone, make a bunch of phone calls, get all of the people that love and support us out, and they came. And it was great.
It's obviously a fantastic cause, and I'm glad we get to be here today. Tell us a little bit about the beginning. How did all of this come to what it is right now? I know Roy and you were still a big part of the Chicago community, too, when it came to helping the community. So tell us a little bit about how all of this started.
So we have some friends who they started their foundation, and my husband goes and supports every year. And I was like, why aren't we doing this? Like, we should be doing something in Jacksonville. We were fairly new to Jacksonville. And there, literally at their foundation's softball game, they had a celebrity softball game. Me and Brenda, who's like our event coordinator, she was there. And I was like, Brenda, like, we need to be doing these things. Like, between you and I mean, in the hotel room, we started just jotting down names for the foundation. And I'm like, and we could do this and we could do that. And then we could have these sort of events and we can help out, you know, these moms and these children. And it literally flourished from there. And we went downstairs and we told my husband and we're like, look, we've got it all planned out. We could do this. We could do that. And he was just like, oh my God, wait, hold on. Just, you know, rewind. And that's where we all started. That's where it all started, and now we're here, which is insane. It is so insane.
Crystal Robertson-Harris with us at the Inspiring Greatness Inaugural Golf Tournament. Crystal, how did you come up with your mission to begin with? Was that a conversation that you and Roy had? Did you come up with it? How did it all start?
So after the names were drawn out, and I went downstairs, and we spoke about it with my husband, that was the next thing. What is our actual mission, mm-hmm. right? Like, who are we trying to reach? And my husband has always – he was brought up in a single – household. His mother was a single mother, and she did, that woman is God sent. She did everything she could to make sure her son had everything he had growing up. And I asked him, I was like, well, who should we gear this to? And for him, it was like a single mother's, because it was closest to home and children. So that's where we started. We're like, okay, single mothers is who we want to impact. They need a lot of help, and you know, the children need a lot of help. And that's where it started. I asked him, and he was like, this is it.
Well, his mom must be really proud.
Very proud. Very, very proud. Yes.
And, of course, you guys have a lot of other exciting events coming up, including mm-hmm. this week. And I know I heard the initial numbers are in from the raffle drawing today. Mm-hmm. So walk us through what is next after today, because you guys have a whole lot of a lot of fun stuff coming up.
Yes, yes. My husband he has so many ideas, and we're trying to sort it all out. But for sure, he wants to do a backpack drive. Mm-hmm. Before school starts for the children. We've even spoke about, you know, getting a few mothers together, hopefully taking them and their children shopping, turkey drive for Thanksgiving. Those are our main like points that we really want to execute. So I'm excited. I'm excited about that.
And I know Thursday you guys will be at the Yards. Correct me if
yes.
I'm wrong.
Yes. My husband has an event at the Yards. He will be there. So if you want to come out and support, that will be amazing.
I love it. I love it. And then the raffle going on today. Can
yes.
people enter the raffle? You have to be here to win.
Yes, you have to okay. be here to win. So be here, enter the raffle. And we're going to auction off some pieces. We have some jerseys. We have some diamonds for
Ooh.
The ladies. Because, you know, it's a bunch of men here. But all of them, like, you know, they have their wives. They mm-hmm. have their girlfriends. So I think it's nice to incorporate, you know, coming home. Because as a woman, you're like, okay, you're gone all day. You're playing golf, right?
Yeah.
Come home with a nice
you
gift
bring some
for
diamonds,
me.
We're good.
Exactly. It's, you know, it's enticing. It's like, you know what? Let me get something nice for my wife. Let me come home with a nice diamond bracelet.
I love that.
Some diamond earrings. She's like, you know what? You could play golf yeah. any day of the week.
I think that's fabulous. Well, Crystal, yeah. we really appreciate you joining us.
Thank
and
you.
inspiringgreatnessfoundation.org if people want to learn
yes.
more, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Check it out and support.
Love it.
Yes. I love
right.
it. I
well,
love
we,
it.
We so appreciate you joining us. And
from
we,
one of from one of the leaders of this event to one of the participants in this event, we're gonna do a double whammy as we have Crystal pass the headset off to. And man, oh man, is this fun to say live and on air.
That's right.
For the first time with the headset on. Thank you to Crystal. And we welcome on to Helmets and Heels the all-pro, the Pro Bowl long snapper. A round of applause back at 1010XL World Headquarters, RJ, for Ross Matisik. Ross, thank you, my friend, for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
I know you walked in, I snagged you, and the first thing you said is, I have to go turn my scorecard in.
Yeah.
How did we shoot today?
We went 4 under, so a lot of pars, not enough birdies, and 1 bogey, so we'll take it. We had a lot of fun, and I was out there with some great guys, so we're just glad to be out here supporting Roy.
Yeah, you were with Laquan Treadwell, of course, former Jaguar as well. What for you guys, why was it important to support Roy and be a part of this tournament, beyond, of course, the fact that you get to play golf on a beautiful Monday?
Right. And anytime you get to come out here and support a teammate and their cause, you know, a lot of players are so busy throughout the year with you know, football, family stuff, whatever. And anytime someone can make time away to make a great foundation like this, you know, I'd love to the guys in the locker room love to show our support and help out any way we can.
We heard things got a little crazy. A goose was hit out there.
That's what I heard. I saw you tag me in that video, and so I decided to watch it. And I guess, what, Josh hit a
Josh
goose
apparently
or a duck?
Hit a goose or a duck.
No
or,
one really knows.
Yeah.
Do we know the condition of this animal?
I know. That was my
I actually
question.
Did try to reach out to the goose for comment. The goose declined the comment. We do have that video up there as well. But yeah, things got a little crazy. Had you played Marsh Landing?
I have. I played a few times. Yeah. Okay. It's a great track, great course. I just love it because it's like this is one of the courses that you can only play in Florida, right? Like you have marsh everywhere, water everywhere. Every once in a while you'll see alligators out there. So I don't know. It's kind of a cool course. The winds were tough today, made it a little harder, but still a lot of fun.
Ross, tell us a little bit about the Pro Bowl. Obviously, it's a cool experience, an honor. So tell us a little
bit
about
how
that went.
I was kind of starstruck when I got there, right? It didn't really hit me until I was there around all those players. And then the fact that I was invited there and belonged there was really cool. And it was surreal, but I had my family down there, had some of my coaches come down, some old teammates. So it was really fun. It was kind of a time to kind of take a deep breath from the season and kind of just enjoy your family, friends, and being in Orlando, which was close, made it real easy. So.
Yet OTAs are already here, so it feels like that off-season goes by faster and faster. What was it like being around everybody for the first time last week?
Awesome. Yeah, we all kind of get – at least me, after the season ends, it's good for about 2 weeks, and then you're kind of like, what do I do now, right? But
you have separation anxiety from Logan. You haven't seen
Logan
in X amount of days.
Yeah, I'm already sick of him, though. I'm just kidding. No, it's so good. I love OTAs because it's a time you can kind of flush last season, and you know you can start fresh, right? You know, you have the roster. Of course, we're going to add some guys this week. But you start fresh, and you start preparing for next year, right? And like what you do now is what's going to determine what happens in January, right? January, February, you know, late in the season and on to the playoffs. So it's kind of you kind of turn that leaf from last year and rebuild with the new guys. And it's always good seeing all your friends back in town and a lot of golfers, great weather. So a lot of matches are played and it's kind of a time to build that team chemistry. So I love OTAs, yeah.
The all-pro long snapper Ross Matisik joining us on Helmets and Heels. Before we let you go and actually eat your lunch, Ross, because I know you worked up an appetite out on the golf course, you obviously don't work necessarily hand-in-hand with Ryan Nielsen and the defensive coaching staff, but obviously you are all one team. Have you felt a renewed sense of something with his addition and with the addition of those defensive coaches?
First time I met him was at the Players' Championship. He was up in the Jaguars 10-on-17, and I introduced myself and shook his hand, and just off the bat, you can tell his intensity. You know, he's definitely an intense person, and you want an intense defense, right? I mean, I'm a long snapper, so I don't have too much to say on top of that, but he seems like a guy that can get the guys going, and a lot of the players seem to be rallying around him and his beliefs. So, you know, if we're a defense led by somebody that's intense that nobody really wants to face, like, I'm all for it. Let's get it.
Most tackles of any long snapper. So I would say you're pretty intense.
Yeah.
I used to be a linebacker, so.
I think we saw that in the preseason.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
you used to be a linebacker.
Yeah, we saw it against the Titans, too.
Yeah, there it was.
In coverage, nobody better.
There's a few flashes. But
Ross, when we're talking about special teams, kind of the evolution of how things were changing, the new kickoff rule this year, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, it's not really, doesn't affect me a whole lot, I guess. I mean, I guess there would be players on special teams when I'm on the field that'll be fresher, right? Mm-hmm. So you'll have, people don't have to run 60 yards on kickoff anymore, right?
Yeah.
And they're going to be right there. So they're going to be fresher throughout the year and throughout the games. But, you know, my job is my job and I take it very seriously. So, I'm kind of worried about punt and field goal. And as long as there's no rule changes, I don't know about in that aspect, you know, it's football, right?
Yeah.
Go out there, play football, and you know, trust your technique. And I know Heath and Luke, our special teams coordinators, will do a great job preparing the guys and informing them on the rules, because I know there's a lot of gray area with a lot of the stuff. Like, a lot of the people are asking me in the locker room, like, hey, this new rule, how does it affect me? Hey, can we – I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But we have great coaches, and they'll get everybody prepared. So we are going to continue our success with special teams because we take a lot of pride in that room. The core players are great, and, you know, we're a top five group, and we've been that, and we're here to show that and do it again. So
there is a kicking competition, and I know one of the kickers has been here before, obviously, in Riley Patterson, so you have familiarity
right.
with him. But Joey Sly comes in, a little bit of a thicker kicker.
Yeah.
Do you guys have any workouts and see who's stronger?
Is he bench pressing like an absurd amount?
You know, I haven't seen it yet. He was been in Italy last week, so he wasn't there, and he's there today, and of course I'm not. But I don't know him all too well. I've talked to him on Instagram a little bit, got his phone number. Welcome to the team. Tell him I'm excited to work with him. And, you know, those two are great kickers. As you know, Riley is as good as it gets as far as being clutch and making big-time kicks. So it's going to be a competition. I think everybody knows that, and everyone knows what they signed up for. So my job is to make their kicks as easy as possible, give them a good snap, and have Logan put it down. And then, you know, we'll see who gets the job. But I'm just here for support and to help out any way I can.
All right, let's get you off to your lunch. Because I know you worked up a sweat out there.
Yeah,
even
like
it was a little bit chilly.
It
was funny. Rolling. I actually said to our photographer, Jacob, I was like, okay, Ross has a jacket on. And then I'm like, oh, wait, now he has a polo on. Because the weather's been
windy.
Like,
yeah, it was
windy.
Like cold, windy.
Sunny.
I could not get comfortable.
Classic
Jackson. So I'm just going to wear it on. And
what a tough life.
Go for it.
I know.
Yeah, right?
Worst
I know.
Way to start a work.
Right,
well, Ross,
right.
We appreciate you
yeah,
taking
absolutely.
Some time. And, of course, we appreciate all you do for Jacksonville.
Absolutely, yeah. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you.
That is the All-Pro long snapper, Ross Matisic, on Helmets and Heels. We're going to be joined by Roy Robertson-Harris and perhaps another Jaguar or two right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM with one more segment to go.
It's a Big Chief Tire Monday on Helmets and Heels, the local Jacksonville shop for fair prices and service you can trust.
This is Helmets and Heels.
This hour is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers. Helmets and Heels is brightened by
First Coast Lighting and Fans
on 1010XL.
Welcome back to Helmets and Heels on 1010XL 92.5 FM. One segment to go here. Mia O'Brien, Taylor Dahl. I'm Lauren Brooks. We are live here at the Marsh Landing Country
what a fun
Club.
Day.
I know. Inaugural Inspiring Greatness Foundation Golf Tournament. It is absolutely such a great cause, like we talked about. InspiringGreatnessFoundation.org. If you want more information, they seek to empower and uplift youth and single mothers. And we're about to welcome in the founder, Roy Robertson-Harris. We chatted with his wife just a little bit ago, Crystal, and how the idea came to fruition. And now we do welcome in Roy. Roy, thanks so much for joining us. We know you are a busy man today.
Super busy.
Yes.
But never too busy for y'all.
Oh, thank you.
All right.
Well, as Lauren alluded to, Crystal already joined us and kind of gave us an idea of how the idea for Inspiring Greatness, the idea for a golf outing, the events you guys have coming up came to be.
Yeah.
Give us your perspective, especially when it came to choosing what the foundation, what group it would specifically target.
Yeah, so I grew up in Oakland, as most of y'all know, Oakland, California, and grew up in a single mother household, and it took me to have my own kids to understand the value of having good parents in the home. And, man, I love my mom to death, and so I just wanted to do something that could help out single mothers. I seen how hard she worked raising me and my sister, and just want to lend a helping hand to those that are in need in inner cities, giving back to Jacksonville because since I've been here, I've been shown nothing but love, myself and my family. And just want to be able to give back to the city. Also going to give back to El Paso, where I went to school at. Want to be able to help out there and eventually Houston, where I've lived for many years, and then back to Oakland. Decided to do a golf event because when I got here, golf is just every direction and corner that you look. So
there's a course somewhere.
Yeah. So I picked the game up a couple years ago, and it's been good to me some days, but it's been really good these past couple of years, just learning the game, learning to love the game, learning not to get mad at myself when I have bad shots. But I knew that, you know, having this event would call in some golfers, and the event showed up, turned out bigger than I expected, and I'm super, super happy with how today went. I'm super blessed. End of the day, I want to be a blessing to those. As much as I can, and this turned out really good, so super excited for next year. Next year is going to be even bigger, and hopefully we can change some lives.
I love it. And we love being here. I also love your shirt, Roy.
I appreciate it. Yeah,
if you're not watching on the YouTube live stream right now, this is elite.
I actually, so before I even knew the game of golf, I remember watching Happy Gilmore as a young kid. I was probably 9 or 10 years old living on my grandma's house. And Happy Gilmore was on. I grew up a big Adam Sandler fan. And so I actually found this on Amazon for like $20. So
deal.
I'm kind of overpaying $150 for a shirt, but I like to buy merch whenever I go to a new club or course or whatever. But this was for the low, so I had to cop this real quick.
Have you tried the Happy Gilmore swing?
No, I ain't gonna lie to you. That was pretty bad. So I learned to play the right way and taking a few lessons over at Sawgrass. So it's been helping me a lot, especially my grip. That's been my main thing, just working on my grip and a consistent swing. So
there's a lot in golf. I don't play golf, but I work with a lot of golfers, and they will tell me everything that they need to improve in their golf game and all that stuff. Let's talk about the defense for a little bit.
Let's talk about it.
Josh Allen just got paid. Foye Luikin just got paid. How excited are you for this defense and how it's coming together under new?
Really happy to see those guys get paid. And, man, those guys are elite. They're the top of the league. They don't get as much recognition as they should. But let's talk about Foye for a little bit. 2 years in a row. Leading the league in tackles on two different teams. He's not talked about enough. By far the best linebacker I've ever played with. He's sideline to sideline, end zone to end zone. He brings the same energy to work every single day. On the field, he's consistent. Mm-hmm. You're talking about averaging 15 to 20 tackles a game. He never comes off the field. Let's talk about Josh.
Well, first and foremost, did you see Josh's golf game at all today?
He was behind us, so I didn't catch it. We were actually moving at a good speed today, so I wasn't able to catch Josh. But I seen some pictures. It looks like he's got some good form, so can't knock it. But no, Josh is one of the hardest workers I know. He's a dog out there. I see this guy come in the building at 6 a.m., 5:30 a.m., just getting extra. He's one of those first to come in, last to leave kind of guys, and he works his tail off. He asks questions that need to be asked. He's like I said, one of the hardest working guys I've ever met, played with, and I'm super proud to be one of his teammates. And he takes a little bit of stress off of me when it comes to pass rush.
I love it. We love Foye. We love Josh Allen. When we're talking about now, obviously, Ryan Nielsen coming and what this defense may look like now with some changes going on, what are your thoughts of Nielsen, Eric Armstead addition to the defense? Looks like it could be fun.
Yeah, Eric is obviously an elite player, really good guy. I just met him when he got here a few days ago when we reported. Everybody knows what he can do pass rush-wise. Talking about Ryan, I think he's a great coach. Brings a lot of energy to the room, and I'm excited to be able to play for him this year. It's gonna be a good year.
Well, also getting reunited with Travis Gibson. You were with Travis for a year, I believe, in
Chicago.
Yeah,
I was with Trev his rookie year. He's a great player, hard worker. He could rush really well off the edge. So it's gonna be great depth on the edge playing with Trev.
We do want to get you back to the people here. This is your event, Inspiring Greatness Foundation's first golf outing. So excited to hear the final total with the raffle, too. I know I got some inside sources saying you guys have done pretty well with that.
No
but before
doubt.
You go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you. UFC 300 last week.
Probably one of the greatest cards. Top five. Top five for sure.
Top five?
Top five. I'm a big Max Holloway fan. He's killing it. I'm super proud of him. Man, and I don't want to mess his name up.
Gaethje?
No. Peoria? I don't know.
Oh, Peoria.
Peoria, yeah. I suck saying his name, but he's definitely one of my favorite fighters. He's grown on me the past couple years. His striking is unbelievable. He took that crotch shot. He told Herb, like, hey, I'm good. We don't need no timeout. Let me go ahead and handle this. That was a big moment. I thought that was really dope to see, so. He's definitely one of my favorite fighters to watch right now.
In case you didn't know, Foye Luikin is the official Helmets and Heels college basketball analyst.
Roy
Robertson Harris, the official MMA UFC analyst. Thank you so much for joining us.
Doubt.
Thank you so
Appreciate
much for having
for
us
coming.
Out here.
No doubt.
And go get some food. You worked hard for
this.
Yes.
Let's get you some grub.
Thank
let's,
you, guys.
Let's get
Thanks,
you
all
right. the day. Roy Robertson Harris, again, the founder of the Inspiring Greatness Foundation. And I know we're going to take a picture here in just a second, so we can do that while we're talking.
And we can multitask.
And while we're wrapping up the show. So, absolutely. Again, Our thanks to the Inspiring Greatness Foundation for having us out here today. You can find out more about what they're up to by visiting their Instagram, Inspiring Greatness Foundation. That is all one word. And if you go there, you will also have access to their website at www.inspiringgreatnessfoundation.org. You'll find out more about the golf tournament as well as, again, the event that they're going to be having at the Yards this Thursday as part of the NFL draft kickoff, and oh so much more. We heard Crystal talk about the backpack charity that they'll also be doing come the school season, and so make sure you check out all that Roy and Crystal Robertson Harris have cooking, and our thanks to them and Marshland and Country Club again for having us here out today.
I had so many things I needed to say to Roy, because when we were talking to Crystal off air, I was asking, you know, how well she golfed, and she was telling us she's getting better, but she did say that she can sometimes hit the ball farther than Roy because he swings too hard, she says.
Well, I'll tell you this, like, having been out there on the course, like, I'm the type where I'm always pulling a wood or a hybrid from my bag because I get intimidated by the thought of trying to strike an iron to drive it that far. Not Roy. Roy's out here. He's got to go 170 yards. He's grabbing an 8-iron, and I'm like, God bless you, man, because I don't know about that. And, hey, our thanks to all of our friends of 1010, our friends from Cookies and Cream Jacksonville. Shout out to Ray and company, who also are out here supporting. They had cookies on two. I'm not saying it, but I'm saying it. Our friends at Taco Lou. They got tacos on 12, ooh, but now yes. We got cookies on 2.
Cookies
at
on
the Inspiring
2.
Greatness Foundation golf outing. So let's make that a thing going forward, folks.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. I want to review some local sports that happened this past weekend.
Absolutely.
Because, as always, we got to talk some Iceman hockey, some Jumbo Shrimp baseball, some college baseball as well. Unfortunately, Taylor, the Iceman yesterday lost 2-1 to the Everblades in the shootout. Yeah, that was unfortunate.
Yeah, I know. And so now they're on the road for the next few games. It would take a sweep, obviously, down there for one of the teams either way to win it. So it looks like chances, unless Iceman can win these three on the road, that they'll be headed back. And so we get some more Iceman hockey, hopefully, here and continue on. Because, like I said, when that first game, they dominated from start to finish. So, and obviously going into an overtime, not being able to pull it out, but they're playing really, really good hockey right now, so hopefully that continues.
So next game at the Everblades, that puck drop 7:30 Wednesday night, so we'll certainly keep tabs of that. The Jumbo Shrimp lost Friday and Saturday night, but they won yesterday, so they did win the series 4-2 over the Norfolk Tides. The road series at Memphis begins tomorrow night at 7:45, so they'll be back at home next Tuesday, April 30th, versus Scranton.
Did Jack Caglione hit another home run?
Jack Caglione did hit another home run. That was, unfortunately, though, only to tie the NCAA record. He did not break the NCAA record against Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt, in the top of the ninth on Saturday, the third of the three-game series, intentionally walked him.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So Caz did tie the record. He tied Tyler Bassetti's record with the home runs in 9 straight games, but he couldn't break it and get it to 10.
Dang.
But unfortunately, Florida lost the series at Vanderbilt. They lost 2 out of 3. And so Florida is just one game over 500, sitting at 20-19 on the season.
I alluded to earlier, Lauren, Scottie Scheffler did indeed win the RBC Heritage this morning. Mm-hmm. He had to finish, I believe it was 4 or 5 holes from the final round last night. But we need to talk about the biggest story when it comes to golf. Round of applause, RJ, for Miles Russell, the Atlantic Beach, Jacksonville Beach native, the youngest player to ever finish in the top 25 on a Corn Ferry or PGA Tour event. I talked to him for the
15?
First. Yes,
yeah,
he's 15.
So crazy.
I talked to him for the first time when he was 10.
Oh my god!
And like, this is a kid who, since he was 4 years old, like, this was the plan.
Yeah.
And we've known it here in the city of Jacksonville, but kudos, congratulations to Miles, who finished top 20 at the Lacombe Suncoast Classic. The way, at age 22, Scottie Scheffler missed the cut 2 years ago. Five years ago at that event.
That'll be fun to track. And Billy Horschel won, mm-hmm. Obviously a Florida Gator. He won in Punta Cana. Getting back to college baseball, Florida is home versus Stetson tomorrow night, 6:30 first pitch. And then when it comes to FSU lost 5-4 on Friday and then split the doubleheader Saturday, winning 9-6, then lost 10-9. So Florida State lost 2 close games to Wake Forest, so they lost the series. Florida State plays host to UNF tomorrow night. That first pitch is 6 p.m., so certainly Noles fans and Ospreys fans will be watching that. JU beat UNF Friday night 10-0 in 8 innings, so that was a lopsided victory for JU. Then UNF won 9-8 in 11 innings on Saturday, so that one went certainly into extras. And then JU won the rubber match yesterday 9-6. And then we've got, unfortunately, Florida Gymnastics came in fourth out of four teams in the national championships. We don't even have to talk about that. One quick
note. Gonna move on.
Yeah, we're going to move right along.
I thought we were going to spend a whole segment on it.
Absolutely not. It wasn't Florida's year, but like I said, that's a whole other conversation. Todd Golden, last note for local sports. Todd Golden landed, Mia, you know this guy well, Elijah Martin, the former FAU guard, will now be a Gator. That's a huge get for Todd Golden as he continues to do really well in the transfer portal. And, that team is going to look a lot different next year, but I think Walter Clayton Jr. with Elijah Martin is going to be almost as dangerous as Zion Pullen and Walter Clayton were this past season. But that's a wrap for us, ladies, live here at Marsh Landing Country Club for the inaugural Inspiring Greatness Foundation Golf Tournament. If you want to get in next year, like Mia said, visit inspiringgreatnessfoundation.org. We really appreciate our guests today, all of them, Roy Robertson Harris and his wife, Crystal Ross Matisik, as well as our guests to cover the teams as we continue the countdown to the draft. For Mia O'Brien, for Taylor Dahl, I'm Lauren Brooks. Thanks to RJ Saunders back at 1010 XL headquarters, Casey Dobson.
Draft week.
Yes, draft week is here for being our engineer here. These heels are made for talking. We will talk to you tomorrow.
And you can